Thank you all for joining us today. And this is a focus that I've always been specifically interested in, as I worked in early childhood for so many years. And I saw more and more children coming into the classroom struggling, whether it be a physical disability, behavioral challenges, you know, just so much going on in children's lives that, you know, I just wanted to be able to support the teachers in our programs and being able to best support children and families in their classroom and just setting up, you know, what I like to say, you know, success stories for children who are struggling and better meet their needs. And so we're going to talk about, you know, how can we put a plan together that really gets everyone involved and helps, again, move that child forward into a more successful path into your, in your classroom and hopefully outside of the classroom at home as well. So my name is Cynthia Parker, and I've been in the field for years. And like I said, a large chunk of my time has been directly working in a childcare setting. And I do have a master's in special education. And again, a lot of that was driven by what I saw happening in classrooms, you know, teachers struggling, families struggling. And, you know, I wanted to, you know, build my understanding and my education on how to best help everyone in the classroom setting when children are struggling and get them into a more positive path. So let's get started here. In this session today, we're going to, again, talk about support. Do that through talking about documenting children's behavior. I can't stress the importance of documentation enough. It's so important to make sure that everybody is on the same page and walked away from meetings and so forth, you know, making sure they all took away the same message. We're also going to talk about choosing specific strategies to meet those children's needs. And then the importance of using a team approach to maximize the success for this child. I always like to start off with a quote or a poem or something, and here's mine for today. There are three kinds of teachers in the world: those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wondered what happened. Which do you want to be? So when we go into the early childhood field, we're doing it usually because we love children and we want to be part of those, you know, really important developmental years early on. And that also means supporting those children who might be struggling or who might be developing outside that range. And, you know, we need to build our skill set. And oftentimes programs, when you're getting ready to become a teacher in early childhood, it may not have provided you with enough skills to do that. So we have to continuously be looking to build our toolkits. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the pyramid model, but I want to give you just a brief overview here. And the website challengingbehavior.org is where this comes from. But many states within the United States are what are called pyramid models, meaning they use this pyramid as a foundation for supporting the development of social emotional skills for young children. And it's broken down into these sections. Let me just go over. First is, in order to support children, we need an effective workforce. So we need early childhood education, you know, recognizing that we have such an important job. And I know there's a huge shortage in the field, and hopefully, you know, we will find ways to build that back up and recognize the work that early childhood educators do. But not just having the people there, but making sure they also have the skill set to support children in the classroom. So that's the foundation. So we are the foundation. Next on the pyramid are the specific things that we offer in the classroom. So we want to make sure that we're offering all children high quality supportive environments and nurturing and responsive relationships. And we talked about, if you joined our session last time, on establishing that positive classroom experience and child guidance, these were two of the elements that I talked about. You know, when children come into our classroom, when we open the doors, we want to make sure our environment is there that is going to be safe, be inspiring, be challenging, be interesting. And we want to build relationships with children and families so that that trust is built which opens up opportunities for children to grow and develop to their best potential. The other thing I talked about in our session last time were the lesson plans we create and how making sure that we incorporate what the pyramid model calls targeted social emotional supports in our lesson plans. So that means we are teaching children the social skills they need to have in life. So when that child does grab that toy or hits another child and so forth, that we're there not only supporting them in those difficult moments to help them, you know, find the right words to say or ask for help, but that we're teaching them those skills before the situation comes. Remember, children are not born knowing how to handle different, you know, social emotional experiences, just like they're not born to read or write, and we're there to help them learn. It's the same here for social emotional, and we do this for all of our children. But today our focus is on this top part of the pyramid, this intensive intervention. And this pyramid, you can see as it's going up, this is the percentage of children at the top, this group of children at the top that are going to need additional supports beyond the standard classroom setting, the relationships and the lesson plans that you're providing. They're going to need some more unique, intentional and thoughtful interventions to help them move past some of the challenges that they have. And that's, again, what we want to think about today. So you probably came into this session with, you know, a child in mind. Oftentimes that's the case that I find, that people come in and be like, oh, you know, I have, you know, Jenny in my classroom and I'm trying to figure out what to do and how to best support her. And that might be because the child you're thinking about has some behaviors that are out of control and maybe really disruptive to the classroom, maybe very aggressive, but, you know, really impacting how the child is functioning and the rest of the children yourself in the classroom. Could be concerned because the child is unusually withdrawn. Now, these are also often the children that are overlooked, because when we have a classroom full of children, the ones who are quiet, we sometimes are very thankful for, because we're like, okay, I don't have to worry about, you know, this particular child because he or she never causes any problems, just kind of follows suit. But those are also the children that you want to keep an eye on, because there might be a reason why they're withdrawn and they might need those additional supports by you to really come out of their shell and really capitalize on what you have to offer in the classroom. It may be that the child has delayed motor skills or delayed speech skills. So again, something that they may start off getting early intervention for or receive public school special education services for over time. But maybe other areas of development are typical, but it still impacts how they engage in the classroom. And oftentimes you'll see other things happen, that if a child is delayed in speech, you might also notice they have aggressive behavior because they don't, or they're not able to use the words to communicate their needs. And so they get frustrated and they're trying to find other ways to get their needs met. And lastly, it could be that a child is simply having difficulty interacting with other children. Some children come in and just have a hard time with too many children around them, children getting too close, taking turns or sharing as they're getting older. And the concern being that it's outside what would be typical for that child's age. So you may have come in with some of these concerns, thinking about a child or two in your classroom or your program, or there could be some others, but these ones are pretty broad. So the idea is, well, how do we put together a plan to best support these children? And, you know, what I propose is that you create your own support plan for that child in the classroom. And a support plan will incorporate a few different pieces, and we'll go through this in more detail in just a little bit. But first, it's going to recap concerns. You know, specifically, what is it that you are concerned about for this child? You know, again, is it something that has to do with their behavior, their social emotional skills? Is it something that has to do with their developmental skills? But what is it that is of concern? You want to identify goals. So just like an IFSP from EI, or an early, sorry, IEP from Special Education Department. We want to put all of this in writing just like they would. And at this point, the child may or may not be receiving any type of services, but we want to make sure we have all our ducks in a row too. So again, where is it we'd like to see the child go? What steps would we like to see them accomplish? What skills would we like to see them obtain? We want to write down the techniques that we're going to use to try and support that child. We're also going to clarify roles and responsibilities for all involved. Because as I said, it's not just about the teacher fixing things in the classroom. It's really a team effort. We want to also put together a timeline for success and to evaluate progress and to constantly continue to document the progress that's happening. And I'm going to focus mostly on documenting the support plan, but you know, documenting meetings that you have, phone calls, holding on to emails that happen between teachers, administration, families, outside specialists is really important so that you have this overview of what's been happening over a period of time and whether what you're doing is making the impact you were hoping for, or it comes to the point where you have to think about what other services or what other outside supports can we access. So again, as I said, everyone needs to be included. So oftentimes we put a lot of pressure on teachers to implement expectations in the classroom for children who might be struggling. And it may be unrealistic because we already have a classroom full of children and those ratios that are met by, you know, established by the state are created for you, a co-teacher, and a certain number of children that are for the most part developing typically in the classroom. But when we have things that are happening that are outside the norm, that's a lot of work for a teacher and a lot of extra time and attention that that teacher might need to use to support a child one-on-one. So we need to make sure the teacher, the teaching team has the support they need to implement what it is we're hoping for them to do in the classroom, to make the adjustments in their classroom, to do their own documentation. The administration team, you're just as important because you're the leaders of a program. And when teachers are struggling, they need you to listen to them. They need you to problem solve with them. They need you to come in and coach and provide feedback and provide tools for them so that they can be successful. And then lastly, we want to get parents involved because the relationship, like we talked about in our last session, the relationship between parents and school is key for the child's success. And anytime you're at this point where you want to begin documenting a child's behavior or development, or thinking about what type of, you know, a unique interventions you can put into the classroom, you want parents to be involved right from the start. You don't want to blindside them, you know, a month and a half into it saying, we've tried everything we can for the last 6 weeks and we, you know, don't know where to go from here. Then parents, again, have lost time to get supports for their child, to collaborate with you. And it's really an emotional, bombardment of or shock to them when they hear these things, all these concerns that might be happening around their child. Now, I did not put support team in here. And I do that for a reason, obviously for privacy reasons. The people who are working directly with children should be the ones who are able to read their documentation and, you know, be part of the teams in working with that particular child. So we always want to respect privacy. But if you do have support staff that go in and cover lunches or breaks or fill in as a substitute, those particular staff should be informed in terms of how to best support a child or what unique things that you're doing in the classroom so that when teacher A steps out, whoever steps in to help can help that room continue to move forward as they need to and as they've been working towards and not that flow. So again, having the people who need to be in the know continuously be updated and trained and informed. All right, so this is the process in which I'm going to go over today. 5 steps. And it really is a flow that you want to create in your program. So we're going to go over identifying the concern, documenting, developing a support plan, implementing the support plan, and evaluating the success of that support plan and of that child. So we just started. I noted some of the concerns that you may have come with today. You know, so again, something's not right. You know, there's some explosive behaviors happening. There are lots of meltdowns happening. There is a delay in speech happening. A child might be biting. There might be some anxieties or fears that you notice that just seem beyond what is typical for a child. Encourage your teachers to communicate these things. If you are part of the administration team, the leadership team, if you are a teacher here today, again, you want to start those conversations with your supervisors and with families. And that type of communication is probably a whole other session of itself, but always remember to be thoughtful. Remember that these types of communications with parents can be emotional. So you want to always be letting families know what your concerns are, but also reinforcing that you're here to help. You want to work with the family. And don't forget to identify those positive attributes or skills that the child has, because as overwhelming as a child may appear or feel to you in the classroom, they always have some positive things going on that we can pull from. All right, so we acknowledged that concern, we raised our hand, we started the conversation, and the first thing that I would always tell my team to do is start documenting. And we talked about function of behavior in our last session. We want to try and figure out and start putting those puzzle pieces together as to, can I find any patterns in this child's behavior? You know, is it a time of day that a child seems to be melting down? Is it certain days of the week? Sometimes when children are going between households, you can see a response that's different after they're dropped off with one parent than another parent. And there could be things going on outside that, you know, you need to talk more about with the families. The documentation also allows us to track progress. So you are going to start your documentation. We're going to put our support plan together, but you're going to continue the documentation because that's going to give us information. What's working, what's not, you know, how far has that child's progressed? If we need to work with somebody outside of the school, this documentation is important to provide them. It facilitates communication to everyone involved. So whatever you write down in a support plan, you want to give a copy to the parents, you want to have a copy in the classroom, you want to have a copy on file for state requirement purposes, you know, whether that's electronic or in a paper file, however you do that, but everyone should be in the know. So also consider how you write these types of tools, because many eyes may be on them. They may end up going to the pediatrician or again to the public schools for an evaluation. And it also enables us to make connections. As they said, we want to evaluate the progress. Is there something that we're doing that seems to be working? In which case, we want to keep doing that. We want to make sure that other people who are working with this child know some of those tips. I've seen teachers implement a support plan and they're all excited. Things are getting better. The child's doing so well. And all of a sudden things start to fall apart a couple months in. And I'll say, okay, well, you're still implementing the support plan? And they say, no, because the child is doing so well. And I have to remind them they're doing well because of those supports that you put into place. And so once you put them into place, you most likely are going to need to keep them in place. Whether at some point down the line, you make some tweaks to them or they phase out a little bit, but you don't want to just stop them. There's a reason why that child is doing well. I'm going to show you a few different ways to, you know, look at the function of behaviors and again, try and put together the patterns as to why a child is behaving the way they are. Or again, concerns about some of their development. I'm going to show you a few different pieces. You can always put together your own. You can look at these ones, put a tweak on them so that they meet the needs of the particular child you're trying to document or the availability the staff has, the teachers have to put down information, the time that they have. All right, this first one is a level of engagement sheet. And again, create something that works for you too. If this looks overwhelming, and each one has a different level of documentation that you'll put on it. But this one really here is having you write down the schedule for the day, all of those areas, whether it's circle time, outdoor play, small group, lunch, snack, bathroom transitions, you're going to put that all into this sheet. So there's one sheet per day. And throughout the day, you're going to just check off at those times, is the child fully engaged, partially engaged, fully disengaged? Simple check mark. So you're going to pre-fill it out, check mark these columns throughout the day, and also note, was there a challenging behavior at the time? And any little notes you want to put along with it. This helps you to see and think about, when is the child having their greatest success? And why is that? What is it about that time of day that might be supporting that child? And also, when the child is having a difficult time, what's missing from this time that helping this child fully engage? Children who are usually engaged in the classroom and the lesson plans are going to less likely be experiencing challenging behaviors. Or if children are having some sort of developmental delays and you find that they're having meltdowns during certain points, like when you're expecting them to do certain self-help skills or fine motor skills, it may not look very apparent at first that they're struggling, but when we start to document it and put the pieces together, we can start to, again, notice that pattern. It's something about when we're asking them to use fine motor skills, and, you know, or it's something to do with, you know, they seem to always have more success when they are physically active, those types of activities. There's also simple behavior tracking sheets, and these are great if teachers just don't have a lot of time to write a lot of notes down, but you write down the specific behaviors that you have concern about. So that might be biting, it might be hitting. So we don't want to just kind of overall say aggressive behaviors, but we want to be really specific. What is the behavior? We have these little hours along the top, 1 hour increments, and we're just going to put check marks within the hour block that that behavior happens. What I love about this tool is you might see a child who's struggling with biting have, you know, 20 different attempts to bite throughout the day and maybe 4 actual bites. And that is obviously a lot and stressful. When that goes down to 10 attempts a day and 1 actual biting incident, in the shoes of a teacher or through the eyes of a parent, it might be the fact that, oh my gosh, it's still happening. And we have a hard time realizing the progress that was made. But if you think about it, if that behavior has dropped in half, it's still occurring, but it's dropped in half, we're minimizing it, we're on the right track. And that's going to be really important to recognize, because as soon as a child makes that attempt to bite or actually bite, it's easy to go, oh, here we go again. And then from a leadership, just finishing up on the behavior tracking, from a leadership perspective, it helps you coach teachers too, to say, look at, you are making a difference. It is happening. Children are not going to go from aggressive behavior today to no aggressive behavior in a week. That's not realistic. Everything is going to, you know, happen over time. So we need our expectations to be appropriate. The ABC tracking sheet, I find teachers have a more difficult time with this one, but it's, you know, coming straight from psychology of, you know, okay, something just happened. And I've asked teachers, well, what happened just before, you know, a meltdown happened? And the response is, I don't know. Nothing happened. Something did probably happen. You may not have noticed it just yet, but something must have been a trigger. And if you can start making notes as to what happened just before, what the behavior is that the child expressed, and then the consequence, and this doesn't mean punishment. I just want to make sure I'm clear about that. You know, it doesn't mean we then punish the child, but how did you then respond to the child? And you might find out something like, as you're taking notes, it may be when a particular child or two get too close to the child you have a concern about. It may be when you know, three or more children enter that learning area with them. And you can start to figure out, well, it might be something to do more with the proximity and number of children around them and the amount of space that the child has. So it doesn't mean another child did something to the child you might be concerned about, but just the fact that it might start to get overwhelming for a child just by having too many people around, or the noise level is going up. So be thoughtful about just giving that general overview. I just turned on the music. So-and-so was in this learning center. We gave the 2-minute warning for transition. To you, those aren't triggers, but to a child, they might be. We have a behavior snapshot. And this is more of an observation tool. So a teacher can use this, but would need someone to cover so that they can kind of step back and just watch what's going on. I've used them a lot. So again, members of a leadership team, this is a great tool to go into the classroom with. So you're focusing specifically on one child and trying to, again, extract some of that information that is hard to see when you're working actively with the children, but when you can kind of just step back and observe and write notes about how many children were in the classroom, what activities were going on, very objectively write children's behaviors. So again, not saying, you know, Johnny was mad and so he hit Susie, but it might have been the fact Susie took a toy, Johnny responded by hitting. You know, we want to take out the emotion when we're writing these things, because if not, again, we're putting in our perspective and might not be getting to the real truth of what's happening with the child when we try and influence it with our own interpretations. We can also write down things that the teacher did and what we think based on our observation might be some of that function of the behavior. And, you know, some of these single snapshots can tell a lot of information. Sometimes doing a couple over the period of a week or two can also be really helpful to put some good information together. And then lastly, I always recommend, CDC is one of my favorite resources for early childhood materials, because it has these great resources, these great sheets that help identify specifically where children should be at developmentally at different age spans. And these are good because for a teacher, you can pull it out, kind of go through it, check, 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 to see if there's something that is a red flag. And it does have that one section that says, act early by talking to your child's doctor if your child, and list some things that should be a red flag. I also love these for parents so that if you do have a concern and it is more developmental or some of these are social emotional milestones, you can give this to a parent. You have something that is a really quality, highly recognized organization that you can share information with. Level of engagement would be more along the lines of on task. So is the child on task and actively engaged in circle time, in the activity that you have going on in the classroom? Are they participating? Do they seem to be enjoying it? And, or if not, are they wandering around the classroom? What's happening during that time? Again, oftentimes you find when there are things that are interesting and challenging for children in the classroom, they're going to be engaged, which then reduces challenging behaviors. So again, that lesson planning is really key as a preventative measure for challenging behaviors, but also as an educational piece to give children the skills they need to handle. As far as behavior tracking, that could be, again, it could be biting. It could be hitting. It could be having an, you know, bathroom accidents if it's all of a sudden a child who's potty trained is regressing. So again, it's looking at a specific behavior that you're concerned about, trying to figure out when it happens more often than not, or overall, how often it's happening. And then as you implement ideas, seeing if it reduces frequency over time. All right, so that's our documentation. And I talked a lot about it, but that's because it is so important. Without this, it's really hard to put together a support plan because people then oftentimes are talking and becomes very emotional. And these different pieces of documentation are giving us the facts that we need to support a child. Okay, So we have our documentation. I recommend that you document for at least 2 weeks. And oftentimes I've had teachers say, oh, I just haven't been able to. And I'll say, well, you need to before we come in and sit down, you know, because I may have done my observations on that child or, you know, the members of leadership, but we also need the perspective of the teachers. You know, what do you see happening? Because again, if not, we can be reacting to emotion and, you know, not see key pieces of information that we need to write a support plan. All right, so I mentioned earlier on what's included in a support plan. We're going to write the overall concerns, the goals. We're going to document classroom responsibilities. So what specifically are teachers going to be doing? Leadership support. What are members of the leadership team going to be doing to support the teachers? And I have a little notes section. I'm going to go through this now with you specifically for those extra pieces of information that need to be written down somewhere. So this is a format that I have used in the past in writing a support plan. So again, at the top, what are the specific concerns? And again, the idea of being objective, what is it that you see happening? All right, avoid interpreting behavior here. And I'm going to give you a specific example after I go through this general overview. We want to write down goals. Again, what is it you're looking for the child to achieve? Are there any step forward that would make, you know, what's the next step forward that you'd like to see to acknowledge a child is progressing, okay? And how are you going to measure that? And by measure, again, that behavior tracking sheet is one great way of measuring. If a child is biting 20 times a day or attempting to bite 20 times a day and is now attempting to bite eight times a day, that's progress. That's measurable. I can say things are getting better. And then a little section alongside that we can write notes to document any progress that's happening. So we're going to write this. We're going to implement this. We're going to come back and we're going to add to this to recognize what's working, what's not. And again, maybe build upon it. Then we have classroom responsibilities. So again, what is it that the teacher is going to do to support that child in meeting the goals that you've set? And when I show you my example, hopefully it'll help you make sense. It's really important to make sure that each of these ideas is directed back specifically to goals, that we don't just broadly start thinking about, let's try and implement A, B, and C, but we're not really making sure that is really supporting a child in reducing the number of times they attempt to bite. And we're going to set timelines for all of this as well. So both the goals and for the teachers, we want to say, when is it going to be started? You know, we're going to start this ASAP. We're going to do this daily. You know, we're going to reassess in 2 weeks. And again, as much detail and specificity as you can add, the better. As I mentioned, it's a team approach when you're implementing a support plan. So members of the leadership team, teachers may need help doing something. You know, we may say they're going to, you know, get a bunch of tools that they can use to make circle time more hands-on, but they don't have time out of the classroom to do that. So how are we going to make that happen? And again, notes. Maybe this is a note reminding us that the parent mentioned they're going to talk to the pediatrician on, you know, Monday the 12th. And that is our reminder to follow up and ask mom and dad or their guardian, how did it go? What happened? Now, I want to get into a really specific example here and explain my color coding and alphabet matching here. I often actually either use an alphabet matching, like you'll see I have A, B, C for overall concerns, or I'll use colors to match information in a support plan if I'm typing it. Because if we look here at the second concern, B, lack of interaction with peers, all right? That's my concern. So I need to now set a specific goal to help that child progress. So my goal is going to be that the child is involved with at least one peer during one free play time and one curriculum activity each day. It's very specific. And when we use numbers and frequency, that helps us give those measurable expectations, because we can say, did they achieve the goal? Yes. As I've been journaling, I've noticed each day that they have met this goal and they've been playing with so-and-so in the block area, or we've set up a routine successfully to help them engage with children in the curriculum. All right. So our concern, we have our goal, but how are we going to do this? How are we going to support the child in this? Well, if you look down here and we follow our letter B and match our purples here, we're going to assign Bobby a buddy during activities, have whole class work in buddies. Janie and Pablo are good matches too. So what this means is that every day we as the teaching team are going to make sure the whole class, we're going to implement this whole new buddy system in the classroom, because again, sometimes what works for one works for all. And we're going to be really thoughtful about who to match Bobby up with during different activities in the classroom. We're also going to engage in more cooperative activities in the learning center. So we're going to be really thoughtful in how we try and engage children. So we might set up things like team block building challenges in the block area and body tracing in the art area. And this is going to be completed by all teachers, and it's going to be happening on an ongoing basis, or you could say daily, whatever that might be. I'll point you just to that first letter C that we have under teacher implementation plan. And I just want to point out again, the level of specificity you want to have. So here I note, in relation to our concern of seeking negative attention above, provide more choices to Bobby during activities, 2 to 3 choices. Choices must meet Bobby's needs and interests, which are trains and Play-Doh. And that's important to note, because if we're going to offer choices, we can't have one teacher offering 6 and one teacher saying, you can, you know, go do just one other option. We also have to think about what those choices are. If Bobby doesn't want to engage in circle time, that's okay. But Bobby also may not want to just go look at a book. All right. That might not be the right alternative choice to set him up for success. So think about what's interesting to him, what he can do more independently, and make sure your choices include things that are going to engage Bobby. So that specificity is here. That way, if you as a leadership member go in and observe the class and you see different things happening by different teachers, you can pull the support plan out and say, I noticed, you know, you're offering Bobby just books. I noticed you're offering Bobby 6 different things, you know, this huge a la carte menu. And you can go back to the support plan and say, we want to make sure we're offering 2 or 3 things. One of those things should always be connected to the trains or the Play-Doh. All right. Again, it helps us all take responsibility. Again, things that members of management might need to do, create circle time name tags. All right. So circle time is an area that might be important to help teachers get materials ready. And again, a due date. Just as much as we expect teachers to follow through with tasks by a certain date and time, you know, those of us who are members of leadership need to do the same. We need to role model that. And another important factor that might be helpful is making sure that if teachers need coaching, that you set yourself up for specific times to do that. And I know that's exhausting and you already have a million things to do, but again, that time you invest now is going to save everybody time later and going to support this child in the best way possible. So that might be going in during group time and modeling techniques each day, starting on a particular day. It might be for a week. It might be reassessing after 2 weeks. And then our notes could include meeting again, identifying how long it's going to be till we meet again and assess progress. It might also, again, recognize that you've already talked to the parents about having a public school evaluation and noting when that's going to happen. Okay. Now, before I move on, I just want to note that if it is a child that already has their IFSP in is receiving early intervention support, or a child that already has an IEP and is receiving services through the public school, maybe just part-time or minimally, ask for a copy of that, okay? Because what you can do, first of all, that's the documentation, okay? So all that other documentation I showed in the beginning, you still may need to do that, but it's another piece of important documentation. You can see what they are recognizing for goals and what they've identified as some specific ideas to implement into the classroom and support that child. And you can take that information and transfer it into a support plan. And the reason I often say transfer the information is because sometimes those documents are just too long and overwhelming. And this support plan, which shouldn't be more than 2 or 3 pages, can just sum up the key important information that is applicable to your school setting. And, you know, again, help bring some clear communication to what is appropriate to expect of teachers or of your school in general to do. And then when parents see this as well, they can really see, okay, my school's really putting in the effort to support my child and doing everything they can. And that's really reinforcing to parents. And it can also then get them to be more involved in terms of, you know, we want to ask you to maybe change your drop-off routine, or we want to set up an extra phone call each day so that we have a check-in time during rest time versus the end of the day talking in front of your son or daughter. Okay, so many different pieces of information we can put here. Once the plan is in place, just like I said, you want to document for 2 weeks, you want to try this out for 2 weeks. Behaviors don't change overnight. And sometimes they get worse before they get better. And that's because we're kind of upping the ante here. All of a sudden, we're not giving in to a child's meltdown the same way. We're not responding. And when we change the game, they may try and up their game and or just become more upset based on what's happening. So we need to establish something and try it out for 2 weeks so that we can see if we're at least noticing a change in behavior. It can take up to 60 days to build new habits for anybody. All right, so 2 weeks isn't even asking that much. You need to be consistent. There needs to be a plan for asking for help, whether that is a teacher asking a member of leadership or the school asking family. And again, work as a team. Continue documenting along the way. So continue if it's the ABC chart or the behavior tracking chart that you were using, keep it going. So that way, when you come back together as the leadership team, the teaching team, and the family, you have all of this information to see what's working, what's not. And again, it's relying and providing facts versus just responding to emotions, and makes everybody communicate a lot more effectively. And that's what's best for a child. So again, quick recap. You're going to start off raising your hand and saying, I have a concern. You're going to document for 2 weeks using either one of the examples I showed you. It could just be an open journal. You decide what works for you as a team. You're going to put together a support plan. And again, that should be done as a team too. So members of leadership and teachers should sit down and do this together. If it makes sense, having the parent there as well. Implement it for 2 weeks and then reevaluate. How are things going? What's working? What's not? What are our next steps? If you do things in a paper format, that's fine. Make sure that everything is signed, dated, and copies are given to all the appropriate people. If you're using more of a digital format, again, iCare can offer ways to document this information so that it is readily accessible between teaching teams and the leadership teams, as well as being able to send that information to families as well. It's all in one place. You have the date tracking already, you know who wrote it. So it can save a lot of those details that can often get missed. All right, I'm looking at the time, talking a lot today, one minute over here. But just to wrap up, I wanna thank you all for coming today. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. But if you also have questions regarding iCare, here is our contact information. Please feel free to reach out and we can get you set up to talk with somebody and learn more. But again, I hope this session just helped you kind of think of a plan that you can put in place and what that might look like if there are things going on in classrooms that are happening that we need to address. And with that, thank you very much, everyone, and have a great day.